You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Monday, 23 August. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Petri Rodenhurst from Hirenia. Week ahead, we got Jackson Hole, but more importantly, perhaps, the US dollar index is breaking higher. That's bad for pretty much everything. COP industrial year-end results, diversity benefiting the group. And then talking to head of credit from Stanlib Fixed Income, dynamics of managing credit risk, especially as we move through a recovery. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Standard Bank to cut space by as much as a quarter. Targets 15 million SA clients. They're already saving. Remember, they closed branches a couple of years ago, a whole bunch of them. But a massive strategic review that they put out on Friday, and part of that is a whole lot less office space. Business Day, claims for unrest damage hit 14 billion, according to Sasria. So they don't expect it to exceed 20 billion, and that's well below the 50 billion estimates that included indirect damage. But certainly 20 billion is something that they can manage. Morning markets, US is green on Friday, S&P up 0.8%, NASDAQ up 1.1%, Asia is green, Sydney up 0.4%, Turkey up 1.7%, commodities green over the weekend, gold 1789, Rand 1523, top 40 opening call about 420 points higher, it's about 0.7%, that as Tencent trades up 2.9% in Hong Kong.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Petri Rodenhurst, founder of Hirenia Capital Advisors. Petri, appreciate the early morning time. I want to talk around that USD index. Before we do, Jackson Hole this week, you make a great point that, in essence, the market is going to be freaked, worried, and concerned pretty much right up until the moment. But, I mean, tapering is happening, and we might get some more insight to it later this week.
Yeah, good morning. I think that, well, Jackson Hole, I think, is obviously the biggest event of the week. There's mm-hmm. also some employment numbers, employment change numbers, which will also be relatively important. But I think most of the market is sort of going to be watching for Jerome Powell's speech on the 26th. And I guess to get a read on what's going to be happening with tapering, I think there's a couple of things. One, you know, once we do start tapering, or the Fed does start tapering the quantitative easing that they've been doing, it does not mean it's the end of QE.
Yeah.
They will still be printing money, just less of it, right? And they won't be selling any of the bonds that they've bought either. But of course, you could imagine that the market will probably overreact, right? At this mm-hmm. stage, most of the market is, I think, expecting tapering to start sort of by the end of this year. But I guess we'll see. And we're sort of, you know, I think what a big theme is in the markets at the moment, what's driving a lot of it, is that reflation trade, or, you know, the coming back to life trade, and this transitory inflation idea. So I guess we'll get a read from the Fed whether or not they see inflation in the U.S. as more persistent or more transitory. I'm in the more persistent camp, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
And I do think that, I mean, I don't think, you know, prices are not necessarily going to come down at any point. And I think there's a number of things that we're watching here. So a number of inputs that goes into their decision. One is obviously the Delta variant, how fast it's spreading,
yeah.
the potential for further lockdowns. And, we, you know, so those types of things is really, I think, what we're going to be watching. If we see, you know, if the Fed is really concerned around what potential additional lockdowns or further lockdowns around the world can do, they might be a bit more accommodative. And, you know, if they say, look, we're going to keep the punch bowl at the table for another 3 months at least, man, the market's going to fly, right?
Well, I suppose that's the inverse. If they say nice things, this market's going to go crazy. Quick last point. In your weekend update, you had a look at the USD index, the DXY. That is breaking higher. That means, as I understand it, if we got a stronger dollar, that's weaker currencies across the board, including ZAR. It's also weaker commodities.
Yeah, yeah. So generally, generally when the dollar index does rally or funds flow mm-hmm. into the U.S. And people are buying, you know, U.S. dollars, that's generally considered a risk-off type scenario, mm-hmm. which is generally bad for, you know, global equity markets, global commodity prices, as well as emerging market currencies, right? So that's a bit of a, I want to say I can't remember what that bird is, the canary in the coal mine. So it shows that, you know, going into Jackson Hole, for example, there's a lot of sort of positioning and people are just trying to take a little bit of risk off the table. Now, whether or not they would have needed to, I suppose we'll find out after Jerome Powell's speech, right? But at this stage, in preparation of that, it does seem that there's a little bit of risk off going into markets. And it's Rich saying that on a morning that the Aussies called up a couple of hundred points and, you know, Bitcoin's through 50,000. Hey, how's that?
Yeah. But I take your point. So, I mean, in essence, this is the market positioning itself for what Jerome Powell might say at the end of the week. And they think he's going to say some stuff that's going to scare them.
Yeah, that's basically what it comes down to. And also what's a little concerning is we've still seen consistently market breadth deteriorating over the last couple of months now. So the market keeps going higher, but on a smaller and smaller amount of shares that are participating in that rally. So that is kind of showing like a little bit of strain here. I guess we'll see whether or not that strain, you know, whether the market rally can be sustained or whether or not the Fed pulls away the punch bowl at the end of the week.
Yeah, and that's
going to be messy.
Yeah, S&P's higher, Nasdaq's higher, but the 2000, the Russell 2000, which is the mid-cap, is not, and that's lagging. Petri Redenhaus, founder, Hirenia Capital Advisors. A poll today on our LinkedIn and Facebook pages, that dollar breaking higher, is it rand weakness, or is it really, as Petri suggested, everyone rushing into dollars? You can have your vote, you can have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles, at MoneyWeb.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money. Also available on podcast.
I'm chatting with Gary Chaplin. He's a Coop Industrial CEO. Results to year-end June saw revenue up 11%, headline earnings up 146, bought back 40 million shares and paid a dividend after skipping last year. Gary, appreciate the time. A tough year, I think perhaps best summed up by your statement which you make in your outlook to the results, which is business has settled into a rhythm in this environment. It is kind of learning how to live with the pandemic and operate within it.
Yes, hi Simon, and thanks for having me on your show. We are very happy with the results, but as you said, they come at a very sad and disturbing time for us. And I think we've learned to live with the uncertainty and the unpredictability. We've settled into a rhythm now. So I think coming out of the year, we've ended with a good balance sheet. We've mm-hmm. got good momentum within that rhythm. Happy with the numbers and kind of happy with where we are and how we see it going forward.
Yeah, you mentioned the balance sheet. I mean, really strong cash generation during the year, helped in large part by less cash invested into working capital. What we've certainly seen with some businesses, and it seems to be a sense with yourselves as well, is in some ways almost coming out stronger. I mean, is that working capital, are you going to be able to sustain those new levels going forward?
Yes, Simon, we have certainly come out of COVID a better business than we went in for a whole variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. I think we're focused, we're more confident, and we're clearer in terms of who we are and what we do. And I think just looking at the results, there wasn't a single standout performance. All of our operations performed well across the board. And generally the balance sheet is quite balanced. There's nothing that stands out as an outlier. So yes, working capital, we're comfortable at that level. We didn't push very hard at year end to kind of do anything extraordinary on working capital. It's a relatively normal level for us, and we that is sustainable going forward.
That is one of the strengths of Co-op Industrial, and it's a classic sort of diversified industrial company. You're primarily non-discretionary, and it's that diversity. You've got logistics, you've got timber, you've got bedding, chemicals, and the like, and it kind of gives you an added strength as they sort of stand together, not as industries, but as a group.
Absolutely, and I think we saw it through this period where in the last year we had a number of our businesses that were closed, but we had the core that continued to run through the hard lockdown. And then coming into this year, we've seen different sectors where we've seen increased home spend, which has really supported our PG Bison business that's in decorative panels and our Restonic business that's in the sleep and mattress sector. And we've seen increased health and hygiene spend, which has supported our Safripol business. And we've also seen a real focus on local manufacture because of the disrupted supply chains.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of across the board, that's given us areas of real strength and growth, which has supported some of the areas where we've struggled, like in the passenger business, where just lower passenger numbers, lower activity has made that space quite challenging. So I think that is our value, is in our diversity, and I think it's really demonstrated that through this period.
Yeah, passenger definitely the one sort of the one tough spot in the set of results. Automotive, you do aftermarket, but you're also selling into the industry. We're seeing a lot of activity from the manufacturers locally in that space. New lines, new products coming on, a couple of year lead time in some cases. Is that something which will benefit your space there?
Absolutely. So we're quite excited about the automotive space, both from a number of areas. One, obviously government support for it with their new renewal of the APDP, Automotive Development Program. Mm-hmm. We see value in the support of global manufacturers. And then lastly, we see opportunity in the move towards new electric vehicles, where a lot of the products that we make are around noise and vibration and heat transfer, and those are all very relevant in new electric vehicles. So for a couple of reasons, we see opportunity in that space, which we're quite excited about.
Okay. That's of course, we think EVs, we think batteries, but of course it's way more than just batteries. Your timber operations are doing well, benefiting from sort of people improving their homes. You alluded to that. You've also got your new timber plant, Ekmo Hondo. I'm bungling that name. Is that still on track? I think it was a January 22 sort of commissioning for that plant.
So we've got two projects there. One is an extension of an existing plant, which will be commissioned in 2022, and that is on track, and that team has done an amazing job. Bearing in mind it's been impossible to get foreign technicians to commission it, and be on track, and that's going fine. And then we've got a second Greenfields expansion at the same site, which is due for commissioning in 2024. And that's a big medium density fiber board plant.
Okay, and capacity? How much capacity will those each add to your current production?
The current expansion will increase our particle board capacity by about 18%, and then the MDF plant will be double the size of our existing MDF plants. Significant increase, really, to support local manufacturing and beneficiary.
Okay, so it is for local. We'll leave that there. Gary Kaplan, Co-op Industrial CEO, talking results to you in June. Gary, appreciate the time this morning.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlip.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlip Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
I'm chatting with Terence Senko, head of credit, Stanlip Fixed Income. Really looking at credit from the other side of the coin. Often we look at the process of fixed income and we forget there's credit on that side. Terence, appreciate the time today. I mean, the role of credit in a fixed income portfolio. I mean, as I was saying there a moment ago, as investors, we kind of forget that credit is the kind of the other side of the equation if we're getting that income.
Exactly. Thanks so much, Simon. So we really see credit assets as an additional source of low volatility income in fixed income portfolios. And this is as compared to other asset classes such as listed equity or listed property. The reason why we see it as low volatility, for example, that the interest and your principal is contractually agreed between the borrower and the lender. But there are two important caveats when it comes to looking credits in fixed income portfolios. The first one would be that in order for the volatility of the income and returns to truly be low, you need to select the correct credits or the appropriate credits so as to minimize, as opposed to completely eliminate, the risk of corporates defaulting on these interest and capital repayments. And secondly, these fixed income portfolios need to be constructed in such a way that the diversity of credit issuers, types of credit instruments, actually serve to reduce the volatility of returns, even if defaults do occur.
Yeah, I take your point in that. I mean, you mentioned contractually, but of course, yeah, sometimes things happen. I mean, one of those things which has happened has been the pandemic of the last 18 months or so. We've seen the economic recovery globally, particularly North America, Western Europe, but even in South Africa, we've seen that improvement in GDP and the like. How has that sort of been impacted, that recovery? How's credit responded in the recovering economy?
Sure. So I think in the initial stages of the pandemic, we saw quite a big shock to credit markets, as with all markets, where liquidity really dried up and we saw very little supply of credit paper. Mm-hmm. But as through the various waves of the pandemic and restrictions started easing, we saw slowly and steadily issuance start increasing in the local credit market. And as where we stand today, many public auctions are multiple times oversubscribed, and there seems to be quite a healthy appetite for kind of listed credit. The one, I guess, disclaimer that I'd make is that increasingly we've seen kind of a separation of markets between the primary issuance, where credit is auctioned, and private placements. And so private placements have increasingly started playing a meaningful role for those borrowers that might not be able to access the capital markets as readily as through the primary issuance space. And in this private placement market, we are seeing that the credit trends are somewhat divergent from what we notice in the primary market.
Okay, I get that. And the recent unrest, most notably KZN back in July, I mean, was that a passing phase, or did that have a sort of a longer potential impact?
Yeah, so Simon, the impact's been relatively muted, certainly in the short term. We haven't seen a significant impact on liquidity or pricing. Certainly the property counters, in particular, were quite badly hit. And we've seen a number of SENS announcements come out, but I think that the longer-term impact will still be felt once the full impact of the unrest has been quantified. And certainly in the longer term, what we are monitoring and looking at is investor confidence to be able to kind of embark on long-term capital projects and need credit in order to fund those projects. So the long-term impact, I think, still needs to reveal itself.
Talking long-term, state-owned enterprises, obviously they're a big player in this space, and it's not just Eskom, there's literally hundreds of them, although Eskom is obviously the biggie front of mind for individuals. Your view on the credit in the SOE space?
Yeah, so investors have increasingly become selective as to kind of which SOEs they support. As you mentioned, it's an incredibly nuanced space, and so discernment that happens is largely on the basis of balance sheet strength, as well as access to varied sources of liquidity. I think with the land bank restructure still ongoing, contagion risk within the SOE sector is still something that's top of mind for investors. And longer term, investors are increasingly looking for tangible evidence of structural reform and enhanced oversight from various parts of government and shareholder ministries to ensure that these entities can be kind of returned to a sound footing.
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately it. I mean, they state-owned enterprises, but at the heart, they're businesses, they're entities. They might be doing essential services, but in many senses, they still get viewed via that same sort of light you would look at any other issuance of credit.
Absolutely.
We'll leave that there. That's Taryn Sanker, Head of Credit, Stanlib Fixed Income. Taryn, really appreciate the time today. That's it for today. A poll we were asking you on Friday on our LinkedIn and Twitter profiles. The JSE had lost 6% in 2 days. We asked you what you were doing. About a fifth of you said, no, heck, you were buying this. About a tenth of you, just under 10%, were taking some time and definitely doing some selling. The other three quarters, which is probably the folks who were doing it totally right, saying, just noise, long-term investor, markets go up, markets go down, don't stress the small stuff. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available just after 7 a.m. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Kudora, Nicole, and Musekhla, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.